Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Fred Monroe. Glad you're with us today. Our goal is to bring you credible and valid information and insights from diverse members of our community. Central Coast Voices addresses how today's choices will affect tomorrow's community and how we look at the long-term ramifications of changes in our society, or sometimes lack of changes in our society. Today we're going to talk about the fact that this is the centennial year for the San Luis Obispo County Library. So we have had a county library in this county in some form for at least 100 years. Many people seem to think that the internet has made libraries extinct. Today we're going to talk about why that's untrue and what our libraries are doing to demonstrate their unquestionable ongoing value to this community and any community within the age of electronic media, which seems to be taking the place. There are some of us like me who actually still have subscriptions to paper magazines that show up in my mailbox, except when my mailman decides to read them first. But so we're going to talk about the fact that print media and electronic media are factors in how the library works and still functions. San Luis Obispo County Library had its busiest year in history in 2018. I would suspect that if I mentioned that to you or I asked you about that at some point before 2018, you would say, maybe the busiest year for a library was in 1972 or something like that. No, it was 2018. Based upon the statistics they give me, the average resident of this county probably visited the library at least three times last year and probably checked out about three items during each of those visits. We can talk about why that's rather statistically skewed, I'm sure, but the bottom line is there were a lot of people coming to the library. Libraries have always been a place for connecting people with information, and we really want to look at how that has historically fit in primarily with books and print media, but we are now looking at libraries that go beyond print media and looking at how they can use different methods of disseminating information and sharing insights in the community. Books are not going away, and some people may think libraries are going away. I would suggest that if you've been to the library, you'll see there are lots of people there using it. You'll also see places as an aside, that the large chain bookstores that are still around are busy on a regular basis. So if people are buying books, that also means that they are borrowing books from libraries. And so if you haven't read a paper book in a while, I would suggest you seriously consider that, but we'll get into the pros and cons of that in a little bit. Chase McMunn, who is the Assistant Director of Libraries for San Luis Obispo County, is with us, along with Erica Thatcher, and she is the Collections Development Coordinator. And we're going to find out what in the world a collections development coordinator does. I don't know if they get to pick the books or discard the books they don't want anymore or all kinds of possibilities. So we'll pick Erica's brain with regard to that. There's a lot that's evolved in the way libraries are functioning. One of my best references is that an awful lot has happened with print media since Gutenberg invented movable type back in the 1400s, but that's part of the discussion at some point probably today also. You can be part of this discussion by giving us a call at 805-781-3875. That's 781-3875. And I'll remind you, as I often do, but some of you don't seem to hear sometimes, and that is if you give us a call in at least the first two-thirds of the hour, we usually have more time to make sure that your conversation fits in here. I'm going to probably do what I would classify as could be considered starting backwards, because I want to know how a collection development coordinator spends her day, because it's kind of like, I realize people who want to decide what's out there and what's available may spend a little bit of time in their day or in their week looking at that, but that's your full-time job. So can you please define that for us, Erica?
Sure, Fred. So I do spend a lot of my time looking at what's out there, evaluating titles, new titles, the formats, and I manage the selection and ordering of print materials at the library. I also do selection and ordering of our downloadable collections, our ebooks. And I I'm kind of all over the library. I support other departments and I manage special projects. For example, we have a Community Reads program called Book to Action every year. And I work with the services department to bring authors to students and teens in juvenile hall. And we also discuss the books we selected. And most of the time, the books are slightly controversial, but really good ideas that we want to share with our community and kind of bring our community together around.
Yeah, I would think that, by the way, there's a prejudice you're going to get from me through this whole process today.
Okay.
But it's an okay one, I guess. It's not a political prejudice or something like that. It is, I am predominantly a reader of nonfiction.
As I am.
Okay. It's I can't remember when the last time I found a novel that actually caught my attention long enough to read it. Mm-hmm. Actually, I have a couple sitting on my nightstand that I haven't finished yet, but but I'm a nonfiction reader. One of the things with regard to nonfiction right now is so much nonfiction is political.
Yes.
A lot of nonfiction that you or I or someone else may think is reasonably well thought out and thought-provoking, mm-hmm. For a lot of people is annoying and provocative. Mm-hmm. So those are people who may decide that the best thing they can do with this book that they hate is check it out and make sure it doesn't ever come back to you. And so I suspect that you oftentimes, well, are there times at which you receive correspondence or comments back from library members that basically say, this is political propaganda and I'm offended that my county government is putting this on a shelf to disseminate for free to people who should never read it?
Well, I'll say that we try to keep our political nonfiction very balanced. There is a lot of it out there right now, so trying to keep a balance is one of my priorities. We do have an avenue for our customers to express their, you know, their disappointment or their, you know, maybe they wanted us to take a book off the shelves. So there's the avenue for them to express that. But I haven't really heard much about the titles that we're offering in the way that you framed it.
Well, that's actually good to hear. That's very good to hear because it's and you're not seeing them all of a sudden. You can't account for them in circulation anymore because you had them last month, but three people have not returned it or it's walked out of the library on its own.
Not yet, but I think what I have heard is you don't have enough copies of Fear, or you don't have copies of. But that's generally the feedback we get.
Okay. Historically, my understanding is that our county library system is part of what I call it Black Gold. That may not be the official name for it. Are we still part of that? It's a multi-county organization, and how does that affect what we do with the library and how it works?
That's right. Yeah, we're part of the Black Gold Library Consortium. It's a group of libraries made starting down south in Santa Barbara, Santa Paula, which is part of Ventura County. Mm-hmm. And it spans all the way up to Paso Robles. I think there are 8 jurisdictions in that cooperative now, but we have an agreement, and so we share a catalog, and we loan books to one another. So you can seamlessly request a book. It'll be delivered from Santa Barbara or Santa Maria. You'll check it out. If you didn't see the sticker on the front, you would never know that it's from a different library system, and you can return it to our library, and it goes back to its home, and you know, you're none the wiser.
Okay. You mentioned that I may find a book I want to check out that actually happens to be maybe in Ventura or Santa Barbara. When you're putting together your collection, are you able to look at a given author or a given subject and decide, you know, this is an interesting book, but we've discovered that Santa Barbara has 3 copies, or Santa Maria has 1 copy and Santa Barbara has 2 copies. So we'll decide not to order a copy for us, because it costs money to buy a book, of course. So we'll decide not to put that in our collection because we know anybody that might like that book is likely to be able to get a hold of a copy through the Black Gold system. Does that affect what kind of acquisitions you do?
Sometimes. It depends on the title's popularity. If there's a big buzz about something, we want our customers to have access to our collection first. So, we'll, you know, we may not consider what Santa Barbara is doing. But sometimes there are items that are, you know, maybe something that we could rely on another jurisdiction for. But we really don't want our patrons to wait. So
I think that's right. Yeah, we generally, you know, we're looking mostly what our patrons would enjoy. So, you know, we might take into account that there are other copies out there, but we always try to fulfill our patrons' needs first. We have, you know, a prefer my patron system so that if someone in Slo County has a hold on an item, they're going to get our copy before it goes out to one of the other library systems. And so generally, I think we see more older materials or, you know, the deeper catalog is what's coming in because we're all trying to collect for, you know, current bestsellers and making sure we have plenty of copies for all our patrons.
This just popped into the back of my head because it's not on the list of the notes we have. It occurred to me that we are in an era when the self-publishing, I can't think of a better term because it's a term around for long, the vanity press, okay? It used to be referred to as vanity press. If you wanted to publish your own book because you wanted it out there, I think in the world of the internet and companies like Amazon, I don't think that term is used anymore. And if it is, I'm just not up to date enough. I don't know what the term is that's used, but do you find authors both locally and nationally who are self-published that are more interested in getting their book on the shelf of a library than whether or not they can sell every copy possible on the internet, or feel like getting it on the shelf of the library is going to sell more copies on the internet? And how do you address that?
So our local authors are fabulous. They come to us with self-published titles, and they donate them because they like the exposure. Mm-hmm. They do because they're doing presentations and talks around the county. They like for the folks who attend the presentations to be able to go to the library or to the bookstore to get the titles. So I'm always happy to accept self-published titles as long as they're in a format that will withstand regular library wear and tear.
Well, do you also have to look at whether or not they're in a format that doesn't by nature have some slant that most people might consider to be an issue of vanity or politics that you would rather not have on the shelf?
Well, I don't feel like it's really my job to censor these voices. If I'm purchasing something with public funds, I generally look for reviews or some kind of evaluation of the item because I don't have time to read them all myself.
Yeah. Do you run out of space and therefore you have to look at, what's been on the shelf and hasn't been, you know, even it may be something that you got offered by an author last month. And so I suspect you may give it more than a month to be exposed to whether or not people are interested in it. Mm-hmm. But I suspect that if you put every book you wanted on the shelf, you would run out of space. I know the local library and almost all libraries have book sales every once in a while to basically remove things that someone might like to have a copy of at a reasonable price, but is not getting much exposure to being checked out or even read in the library.
That's right, yeah. We're always working with our local authors, and there are definitely plenty of local authors to work with here. We want to, you know, to get their, as Erica said, their voices out as much as possible, and we certainly appreciate their passion that, you know, that they put into a project. Usually it is, you know, a very personal thing to them. You know, for instance, their dad served in World War II or something like that that drove them to write a book in the first place. So finding space on the shelf, of course, is always an issue.
That's the difficult part. Yeah.
And another issue is it's also really expensive for us to catalog the book. Mm-hmm. So if you have a unique book that hasn't been cataloged by another library, someone has to sit and actually read through it and catalog it, which could make it more expensive than just buying a copy of a book from a regular, you know, vendor. And so we try to find places where we can put their book. We can never guarantee anything. We do have to review it just to make sure that it has some standards or it has a local interest. And we try to find a place for it on the shelf, but we can never guarantee it's going to make its way into the catalog. It may just be an honor system, you know, at their local branch so that they can get their words out to the community. We also find other ways to maybe promote them. We had an Indie Author Day last year, and, you know, several authors that have these self-published works. It was basically a big convention, so they all brought their work and were able to talk about it to a large group. So, you know, that's another way that we try to get their names and their voices out there while still, you know, running the library we have to run.
Yeah. As you mentioned, that we have a film festival. We have a couple of film festivals, but we have the San Luis Obispo International Film Festival, which is the largest every, usually in March. Are there traveling libraries or traveling book collections? So when there's a film festival going on, let's say you can bring in a mobile collection for 3 or 4 months related to the film industry, and that then would move on to another film festival. And you can tell me that's either too expensive or ridiculous. You wouldn't be the first person who's told me that.
I think that's a really interesting idea.
Yeah. We like to show up in unexpected places, so yeah. That's a very cool idea.
Yeah, because we're closely related to the film industry. Santa Barbara, sort of not a competing film festival, but is a phenomenally worldwide known film festival, a lot larger than ours. We're very close to the motion picture industry, as far as how close we are to the LA Basin and Hollywood. So I didn't know if there were people who maybe have a mobile collection that they share with libraries. So maybe you could start one of those.
Well, our audiovisual coordinator, Steve Kinsey, just started a partnership with the Central Coast Film Society, I think is their name of the organization. But they're getting ready to do some great programming, and I can imagine this would be a good thing to add to those programs.
Yeah, think about that.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Let me remind our listeners that this is Central Coast Voices if you're just tuning in. And today we're talking about the fact that San Luis Obispo County Library is celebrating its centennial this year. And we're also dispelling the rumor that libraries are a done deal that is not active anymore, because the San Luis Obispo County Library had its most successful year last year. There were over 1 million visitors to the library, and over 3 million items were checked out, which is where I got my skewed statistics as to, because we realize some people probably visit the library every day, and other people have not visited at all, but statistically speaking, that was the average. You're welcome to be part of this discussion. The phone number is 805-781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. So the concept is, for a lot of people, that the printed word on paper is no longer active because everybody's reading it on their telephone or their tablet or their computer. My personal opinion is I can squint a lot less reading a piece of paper than I can doing it on my phone or my computer. And my eyes don't hurt as much after a couple hours of reading. But there are some people who probably, it's like, I'm sure you hear from people that haven't read a printed book in years, or they still read everything on their phone. And you also have, and we'll get into this in a minute too, a rather extensive audiobook collection. That's a fascinating, I really prefer, when I can, as much as I like print books, audio books that have been read by the author.
Right.
It's some authors are lousy readers of their own material, but it still sounds better.
Sounds authentic.
And and I think that's very important too. I'm assuming that has helped a lot with people who are not checking out paper copies of books, but are finding that that being able to have an audio copy of a book available is a great alternative. I believe they're mostly still acquirable by actual hard disk if you want them, but maybe there are some that are only downloadable now?
Yeah, sometimes it takes longer for the CD version to come out. The downloadables generally come out within a month of the print, as far as I know. But yeah, listening to a book from our downloadable collections is really a great service. We offer Cloud Library, one of our platforms, and OverDrive, and with those platforms and the apps, the free apps that go with them, you can do so many different things. You can adjust print size for the ebooks. You can adjust the light, how you're when you're reading. For audiobooks, you can adjust the speed. So right now, I'm listening to books at twice the speed and getting through them twice as fast. So it's pretty fantastic.
That had never occurred to me. Yeah. Okay, but I am more likely to have the disc version, but I'm changing that. Some things is when I'm out walking, I get from my phone.
Yeah.
But travel a lot back and forth to the family in the Bay Area, so it's good. It's nice to have.
It's great.
I have one of those strange cars. It's only about 5 years old that actually still has a CD player. But so has that. I would assume that has done a lot to maintain library interest, because there are a significant amount of the population that is not interested in having a piece of paper to turn. I don't understand why, but I'm also an old guy. But I would assume that that's really helped a lot to maintain your readership.
Downloadable Library is our fastest growing collection. It is if you looked at it as its own branch, it would be the fourth busiest library in our system, right behind the three large regional libraries. So the numbers are always picking up, and we definitely hear from people that say, you know, I never come in your doors, but I'm so glad that you have this downloadable material, because I use that constantly. And, you know, they each have their own benefit. I for one, even working for the library, I feel nervous about taking a library book on a long trip. So it's really handy to just download, you know, a book to your iPad, and, you know, then you don't only have to worry about losing your iPad. So, and, you know, if you... you know, if you can download audiobooks to your phone, and you don't have to worry about losing a disc under the car seat of a rental car or something like that, it makes it easier.
These are all explanations you've heard before, huh?
We've heard everything.
Well, we find people use both. Most people use both. They mix it up. Except for those teens. Like, every teen I ask, you know, do you read ebooks? Do you listen to audiobooks? And they say no. They like print. So who knows? The young people.
That's it.
Yeah.
I'm startled by
Prince
that.
Print's not dead.
And analog is very back in. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're also buying it. Some of them are actually buying LPs too, but
that's right.
There's an awful lot of musicians. Actually, we was at Live Oak Music Festival last week, and I was surprised at the number of current artists that I would think are focused on a younger audience that are still putting out vinyl. So let's see. Artists are putting out vinyl, and you're actually finding young people who like a paper book.
They like paper.
What is the explanation? Are you getting any kind of idea of what the explanation for that is?
Maybe. Well, this wasn't an explanation given to me, but I'm maybe guessing that they spend so much time on their devices or staring at a screen that an actual real thing might be kind of comforting.
That's good to know. That actually is something I'm very surprised to hear. That audience, and I think to call it an audience is probably not a good choice of words. That clientele for the library is fascinating that they're interested in print now. But I would also think that for some clientele, and for a long time, probably the thing I used the library for the most was to have access to periodicals that I don't subscribe to. When I used to be in an industry at one point where in rainy weather I had no clientele to work with, because it was something that had to be done in dry weather. So I would actually spend rainy days, and when I lived in South County in the Arroyo Grande Community Library, where I would basically just pretty much start at the A's and start going through all the month's periodicals to see what I could glean from that. I'm sort of an information junkie, but but I would say the periodical, I mean, when I've been in the library, both in Atascadero and in San Luis Obispo, happen to live in Atascadero now, it does seem like there are more people over near the periodicals than any other section of the library. And that may be because, number one, the current issues of periodicals are not, you can't check them out yet.
Right.
But I'm wondering if it's just because people find that to be a good rotational source of information.
That could be. You know, and it's also, it could just vary. People use the library in different ways. You know, a lot of people just put holds on a book and will come in and pick it up and leave right away. But you're right, the newest edition of a newspaper or a magazine has to stay in the library. So we also make those comfortable seating areas. So it's a good place to sit and relax and read the content that you want to read. But I will throw out that we do have a downloadable magazine app too, RV Digital. So, and that's one of the things that I use most from the library personally is we have a really big selection of magazines and you can download the full image. So it's, you know, you're looking at exactly the page of the magazine flipping through.
Is it downloadable like as a PDF or?
It's, well, not quite a PDF, but the same sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's an image of the whole page and you can tap to zoom in on the text and, you know, see the beautiful photos and everything.
It never occurred to me to look for that. What is the app called now?
It's called RB Digital.
RB Digital. Is there a charge to use it or is it?
For everything we offer, all you need is a library card.
Okay. And you said, Erica, you said there are two different apps now for downloadable audiobooks. Overdrive, I'm familiar with. That's the one I have got loaded on all of my devices. So I didn't go looking for another one. I'm challenged enough electronically that if I've got one thing that works, I don't go looking for the other versions of it. But what is the other app?
So it's called Cloud Library, and we encourage all of our customers to give it a shot because it's a really unique platform. It's a sharing system. So we are in a consortium with 26 libraries in California. So we have access to all of their collections now, which means our customers will have access to about 140,000 items in August. So, you know, there's more titles, more copies. Just the variety is pretty amazing of what folks can download.
Yeah. Some of the audiobooks you have, unless this has changed recently, even though you could, even though an infinite number of people could download it, you've basically paid the licensing for a maximum number of copies that can be downloaded. Is the cloud platform different or is it still the same way? Only a certain number of people can have them at one time?
So yes, we pay for a certain amount of copies or licenses. Mm-hmm. But if our copies are all checked out, our customers may have access to another library's copy. Or if our license runs out, they may still discover that title in the catalog because another library owns it. So it's pretty cool.
I'll have to check that out. I did not know about that, and I apologize for not being better informed about that.
It's a new platform, a new service, and we just began offering it in February, so we're still getting the word out.
Well, that's good. I'm 3 to 5 months behind for me is not that far, so that's pretty that's good from that standpoint. We're talking today with folks from the San Luis Obispo County Library and talking about their services, but also the fact that it is their centennial year. And if you thought libraries were not still happening, I can tell you that 2018 was San Luis Obispo County Library's most active year with the most visitors and the most items that were checked out. And we're going to get into some of the technology things that they're involved with, too, in a couple of minutes. But you can give us a call at 805-781-3875. That's 781-3875 if you'd like to be part of this discussion. Okay, so we've talked about enough paper for a while. One of the things that you offer is, and I have to say that even though I know what a makerspace is, I don't know what a mobile maker kit is, and it was one of the things that you put in your notes to us to talk about. So please define. Who gets first crack at it?
I'll let Erica talk about it because she was actually the one that helped put this together with our adult services coordinator, Sharon Coronado.
Yeah, see, I am. I'm all over the place. So the mobile maker kits were kind of born out of a grant that we received, and they are kits that include robotics, coding, programming, sewing, all kinds of opportunities for our customers to sample technology without having to purchase it. So we have a sewing machine. We have a robot called JD Humanoid. We have a Raspberry Pi.
Back up. Okay. you need more information about what Raspberry Pi is. Okay.
Well, these are all programming tools. Okay. Folks can build their own. They power a lot of and control a lot of different devices. So there's so many different ways you can use it. I'm not even super educated on it. I don't think I'm educated enough to.
Is Raspberry Pi related to mathematics?
I think it's just a programming
tool.
Okay,
all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of a very basic computer that people can practice programming, and it offers a lot of different options as far as what you can do.
Yeah. So is this technology that can be checked out, or is it technology that you have available within a study or workroom at the library?
So this is actually circulates. It checks out. People have a chance to sample the technology, to get hands-on experience with items before they purchase them. And one of the other items that is in these kits is a Wacom tablet. It's illustration and digital illustration. It's a giant tablet, and you can do all kinds of interesting things with it. But they're also very expensive. So, you know, it's a good way to try something before you commit to it.
So I would assume those are also maybe popular with really your young clientele. I mean, my hunch is that there are kids out there that are 10, 12 years old that have really started developing some computer skills to really start looking at that,
mm-hmm.
often with technology that their household could not otherwise afford.
Yeah. So we're increasing the access to technologies, which is really a really great thing.
Which brings me to the other item that I was surprised to see on your list, and that is that you have Chromebooks that can be checked out by people.
That's right. Yeah, for a while now, we've offered Chromebooks in our libraries that people could check out at the front desk and sit down at a table and use. But to bridge, you know, what we call the digital divide, the people that don't have access readily at home, we've started checking out Chromebook kits with a Wi-Fi hotspot. So, you know, they check out the bag, and it's a little laptop that comes with a Wi-Fi hotspot. So if they don't have internet at home, they can still get online. You know, the idea is that perhaps it's a kid that needs to do homework, or, you know, it could be anybody that really has any need to connect online. But it's our way of helping people, you know, bridge that divide.
So how long can they check it out for if they check it out?
Those are for 6 weeks, I believe, right?
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's...
Yeah, we wanted to make it useful for people, so give them a little bit of time with it.
Yeah. Well, the flip side of that is if I don't need something for 6 weeks, but I may need the ability to check email once every couple of days, and I don't have an internet connection or a computer, so someone can come in the library and use one of them within the building that way on a daily basis or often.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Email, and we have lots of technology in-house, too. At our San Luis Obispo Library, we have what we call the Creative Lab. So it's a, you know, high-end computer with the Adobe suite on it, and we have a digital camera, lighting equipment, microphones. So the idea is that if people want to come and make something, you know, film a video, or make a podcast or something, we offer the equipment and the computer that they can use right there to edit what they want. And we, of course, have computer labs that people can check their email or work on resumes, fill out job applications. That's very much part of what we do.
Yeah, because I think sometimes we lose track of the fact that there is a significant amount of the population that the expense of an email connection or an internet connection and a computer is completely out of their range. My wife recently retired as a middle school math teacher in Paso Robles, and she had said that there were students that the students were all provided with a Chromebook as part of the school environment in Paso Robles, but that some of those kids with the Chromebooks at home did not have any internet access. They had it at school because it was just, I mean, it's been said, some of those parents flat out said there's no room in their budget for internet on a regular basis. And for some kids, that's tough, especially the ones that are feeling positive about the experience and the connection with that. I had not really thought about that as a library function. I've thought of it more of a school function. So.
Yeah, and in some of the more rural areas of the county, I think connection is just not even an option. So
it's true, yeah.
So, yeah, the hotspots are popular.
Yeah. So they can be checked out for 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is it giving away a trade secret if you tell me how many of those you have?
Oh, goodness. With the Chromebook and Wi-Fi hotspot, I think we have 10 right now.
Right.
And
wow.
we are expanding that soon. We also have just Wi-Fi hotspots that we check out for, just like you mentioned, the students that are given a Chromebook by their school. We've offered that for a while. Do you know how many we have now?
This is a Black Gold project, so there may be more, but I think our library owns 35.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound about right?
Wow, that's we're going places I didn't even realize that you were involved in. That's terrific, because I think that is, from my perspective, that is dealing with a socioeconomic challenge of any community that that sometimes doesn't get addressed. A lot of people, we've had discussions with friends that were surprised when my wife said that there are students that she has that can't go online at home and check their grades because they have no internet connection. And the answer was, well, gee, everybody's got a Chromebook for the school. Yeah, but that only covers part of the problem, and that's a finite cost as opposed to the ongoing cost of an internet connection. So as part of the library, that's a terrific thing to be part of.
Yeah, and all of our libraries have Wi-Fi in the building too, so they could bring their laptops or Chromebooks in and work in the library too.
Ah, okay, so a reverse hook on that process too, so you don't need to check one out. Okay, so all the kids in Paso Robles next fall who don't have internet at home, the library has got internet connections. Go visit it, and
I'm sure they'd love to see them.
Yeah, and yeah, gee, I don't want to get geopolitical also, but my understanding, okay, the Paso Robles Library is a separate library, not part of the county system. Are we allowed to talk about that?
We can talk about that.
Yeah. So Paso Robles just decided that they wanted to have their own library standalone?
I think that's the case. I don't know the entire history, but long ago they decided they wanted to be their own library system. And for a long time, the city of San Luis Obispo had their own library system. But Paso Robles is still very much their own independent system, and I think they want to continue to be
okay,
that way.
Hold on. Okay. We have a caller here. Hold on a second. Faith from San Ynez, are you there?
I'm here, yes.
You're on the air.
I'd like to thank you for this program today because I love libraries. I find I go to a library and I relax. Sometimes I relax so much I forgot. But as a child in England, we moved in the Blitz, and so everything was left behind. Books that my brothers would have had, they were gone. And when I moved to, there were no books. And at school, they used to come around with a saucer, I call it, with books on. And they say, take that one, dear. And I'd say, I've read that one. And they say, well, read it again. I've read it 3 times. Anyway, so as an adult, I love libraries. And especially now, because I can come to my library or ring them up and ask for a book that I've heard about on NPR, and they get it, and it's like magic. And so thank you very, very much for the library system, and I love books.
Okay. Thanks for your call.
I appreciate it.
Take care. Let's see. Cassandra in San Luis Obispo, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, I have a question about virtual reality. I recently heard that the libraries check out the virtual reality goggles.
Yes.
And I was calling to find out if that's a service that's offered at all of the branches, and can those be taken home?
So, yes, those are part of our mobile maker kits that I didn't mention. Yes, so you can find them in the catalog and request them. They're pretty popular. And Cassandra, are you here? You're here in SLO.
So, yeah.
Yes.
So with your card, you could request them to be delivered to any library, and you can take them home and try them out.
I remember growing up, virtual reality was sort of, you know, an expensive thing in giant rooms. And as a kid, just I wanted to try that so bad. And it's so fun to be able to put these little goggles on your face. And, you know, suddenly you're walking across a tightrope in a canyon. It's really quite an experience.
Yeah, I haven't used those before, so I'm looking forward to checking them out.
Okay. Thanks for the call.
Okay.
Thanks for the
point.
Thank
you.
Okay.
Thanks, Cassandra.
Yeah. That's good. The new innovation that the guests forgot to add to their list.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but thank you. That's wonderful.
And we're adding new and different VR headsets to the collection too.
And Chase, you give away your age when you talk about virtual reality when you were a kid. Okay. There were no computers when I was a kid.
Oh, am I the youngest in the room?
You're probably close. Yeah. I was talking about being the youngest in the room. That's something that Erica brought up that I'm refreshed to hear, and that is that you're finding younger people who are very interested in print media as a way to explore.
Mm-hmm.
I still own my 1974, I believe, edition of Encyclopedia Britannica. Because even though it's very out of date, I won't let it go. It does indeed sit on a bookshelf in my office, which is sort of the den of the house. It's there. I realize incredible stuff is out of date. Rely a lot on the internet and Wikipedia for other information, but I can't let it go.
Yeah, it means something.
Well, it means something, and it's still fun to go look at. There are times that I've gone back to look at topics that I know have been expanded upon.
Mm-hmm.
I was having a discussion with somebody about some issues of some Einsteinian material, and we agreed that there was a lot more detail available on the internet than there ever was in the Britannica, even though in the mid-70s most of what Einstein had developed was already had been analyzed to death, but from that standpoint, it's nice to have paper.
Mm-hmm.
It's as you were talking about young people, it occurred to me, and a lot of our listeners understand that this is not my day job. I'm a volunteer here. My day job is I'm a travel advisor, and I have clients that just went to Ireland that are in their early 30s. And the top of their list of what they wanted to see was the library at Trinity College, because they said that is indeed one of the largest libraries in the world, and it's the largest, I guess it's the largest continuous open building with an incredible set of stacks on a mezzanine that are just like hundreds of thousands of titles. But it was nice to know that someone that was that young thought that was something that they really wanted to see when they went to Ireland.
I've read that libraries are on a lot of bucket lists. Like there's a brand new library in Norway, uh-huh. I think Oslo. And it takes up like two city blocks, and it's this fantastic modern building, and people are flocking from all over the world to see it. So
that's
pretty neat.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, What are we doing for the centennial? Anything in particular? You can say just celebrating all year and get away with it. But
We are celebrating all year. So earlier this year, we found out that the first public librarian in Slo County actually didn't have a grave marker. She was buried in the cemetery here in Slo, but it was unmarked. So our foundation led a GoFundMe and raised money from the community to give her a gravestone. So that was an interesting thing we did earlier. We have a big centennial celebration this Saturday evening. We are pretty full, so if you can't make that one, we also have we have birthday parties at all our libraries on July 6th. So do check out our event page. It's if you go to slolibrary.org, right there on the homepage is events, and you can see all the fun things we have going on. We have, let's see, we partnered with Hearst Castle because we found out that they were celebrating the centennial of their groundbreaking. So we have several historical fashion shows. Steve, our AV librarian, has a historical film series that's being shown at our libraries. Oh, and I should say one of the big things we did at the very beginning of this year is we removed overdue fines from our library. So we are now a fine-free library, and that was a big thing.
I think that's wonderful for folks, but I'm also wondering whether or not you find that books don't make it back as fast as you want because you're not charging a fine anymore. I can understand both sides of the equation. We can probably debate it, but it's I'm just curious of whether or not that's affected how well you get things back when you want them back.
We have not found that things don't come back. We actually find that some people are more willing to bring things back when they don't have a stigma attached. You know, a lot of people, if they racked up a certain amount of overdue fees, they would kind of just disappear, and they disappear with the materials also. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we haven't noticed any large missing books.
Okay, here's another twist before we get out of here, too, and that is that one can get their passport application processed at all of the libraries or certain libraries that they can do that at?
That's at our three regional libraries. So Atascadero Library, San Luis Obispo Library, and Arroyo Grande Library.
So if you need a passport, talking to my clients out there, sorry. You need a passport and you don't want to deal with the post office, the library can handle the processing of the applications also.
We make it as painless as possible. I will stress as possible. That there is the regular fee through the State Department that people have to pay. But yes, we will process their new passport applications and those that have expired beyond 5 years.
Yeah, because if your passport's expired only within the last 5 years or hasn't expired yet, you can do it all by mail without it having to be certified by anybody else. So that's good to know. But I have to confess that I had a client tell me that before I read it in your notes because I didn't realize that they could do that at the library. Someone told me, I think, actually the Santa Margarita Library does it too. Somebody at the Santa.
Well, it's close to the Atascadero Library, okay. But yeah, okay. I don't think they're doing it at the Santa Margarita Library.
All right, then maybe they came to Atascadero.
Unbeknownst to me.
Okay, all right. Well, so this is maybe something that doesn't come up often, but it occurred to me we probably need to address this too, is you may have some clientele that are either don't have transportation, but have the ability to do things online. If someone doesn't have a library card and doesn't have the ability to get to the library in person, can they still get a library card?
Well,
okay, so I stumped the librarians here. Okay.
There are certain resources you can access with an online, an e-card. So you could register online and get a temporary number to use for certain things. Mm-hmm. But in order to access some of the resources online that our library provides, not necessarily the Black Gold libraries, and to check out items from the library, you'll need a physical card. We need to verify an address.
Yeah, I'm thinking of people who may never come in to check out a physical book because they don't have the mobility, but want to be able to do it, you know, online books and things like that.
Yeah. We're also working to get out into the community more and sign folks up where they are instead of asking them to come into the library.
Yeah, just an aside, you may think about maybe connecting with an organization like the Food Bank or Meals That Connect.
Actually, because, we're working with Meals That Connect right now.
That's because that may be a way to get some people who don't have the mobility. Yeah, okay. Thank you. Glad to hear that one. Yeah, anyway. I'm relieved that we still have libraries. When I'm in Paso Robles, the old Carnegie Mellon Library is a beautiful old building in the park there. The old Carnegie Mellon Library in San Luis Obispo City is our historical museum. I guess as a parting comment before we get into stuff, is the evolution of the Carnegie Library something that you as librarians have looked at? I'm kind of a history buff, so I pay attention to stuff like that. You guys may be too busy to deal with history other than contemporary things going on in the library. But I'm wondering whether or not that whole Carnegie system of libraries is still looked at by your profession as a key part of the process.
Oh, yeah. I think it defined a generation of libraries. It really helped solidify the public library in America. You know, I think we were the example for the world for a long time of what a public library could be, and I think the Carnegies played a big role in that. You still see a lot of them, especially I grew up back in Michigan, and you saw even more back there. But yeah, they certainly left an impact. And the Carnegie Foundation is still involved with libraries to this day, even though they're not building buildings per se anymore.
So. Yeah. Well, we're down to our last few minutes. And as most of my listeners know, that I do my best to make sure that you guys get to make sure that our listeners know what's most important to you with regard to this. So I'll get out of the way. I guess I'll start with Erica, and you have your time to make sure everybody knows what they need to know before they leave.
I kind of want to go back to our Community Reads program and say that I think libraries are in a unique position to kind of help shape our communities, and especially in times like these where people seem to be divided. And science is showing that reading and hearing stories really makes folks more open-minded and more likely to change their mind about something. So I like the idea that libraries provide these stories and these engagement opportunities to share stories.
Because you took less time than I thought, I need to ask a question. I'm curious. Are there things that are changing in the way that you're part of this profession, in the collection expansion and development part? Mm-hmm. Look at things. Are there things happening in the way books are distributed that we're going to see even more opportunities for people to maybe read things that they didn't have access to before?
I don't know how to answer that, actually. I think having a digital format and digital platform to share these stories will probably boost that. That's a good question.
Okay. Yeah. I just was thinking, because the discussion we've had today has actually gone in some technology directions that I was pleasantly surprised. I mean, I would not have thought that the last year of the library was indeed your busiest year, because It doesn't seem as busy for me as they used to be, but mm-hmm. I'm also a regular library user. So from that standpoint, I was just surprised.
Using the library in different ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Chase, your thoughts.
Oh, my goodness. Trying to wrap up everything. It's so tough. I'll just really stress that, we focus on our mission of connecting the community to knowledge, culture, and creativity through exceptional service. And we really do take that really seriously. We are still in the business of connecting people to information. So that used to be books, and now that includes a lot of different things like we're talking about, whether that's reading what you want to learn in an ebook, a book, or actually doing something hands-on with maker spaces and trying out mobile maker kits. We focus on being a community connection spot. So we try to offer the library as many hours as we can when people can get there. So we just open San Luis Obispo on Sundays. And so that gives, you know, busy people another extra day to get there. And we hold great events like the ones that Erica and others put together, like the Reads series, and we hold exhibits. Really, we focus on being a space for people to gather and be that place. I forgot which author it is said it, but it's social infrastructure. You know, it's really one of the only places we have where you can sit, gather, meet people in your community, and not really be expected to buy anything. So we're always introducing new technology, new tools. If you haven't come to one of our libraries in a while, you really need to get down there, talk to the staff, and see what's available to you, because we most likely have something that you'll be really interested in.
And I can attest to the fact that the new Atascadero Library has a lot better parking than the old Atascadero Library does, and is a lot more centrally located and easier to get in and out of as far as traffic. And it's a wonderful facility. That was quite a benefit. I realized that was a building originally intended for another purpose that during the recession didn't do well, and so it became an opportunity for the library system. I thank you very much for that. This has been Central Coast Voices, and next week neither Chris Kington Barker nor myself will be here because it's the 4th of July. So Central Coast Voices takes a holiday. instead, you can tune in because we are going to have the Capital Steps Politics Takes a Holiday, which will be a one-hour humor program. If you have never heard the Capital Steps, you should hear the Capital Steps. I never listen to my own program, but I would listen during that hour, and I can tell you I have seen them live. They have a twist on things that even makes people like Stephen Colbert not look as clever and as funny as they are. But that's what's coming up for in this space next week. Central Coast Voices is a production of Action for Healthy Communities, which is a project of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County, along with KCBX hosting us here, which we appreciate. You can read the report, statistical report on the status of the county and what's going on at actionslo.org. Want to thank Joan Gellert Sargent for her continuous underwriting of this program. Your input about Central Coast Voices can be sent to voices@kcbx.org, or you can call us at 805-543-2323. Thanks not only to you for listening, but also thanks to KCBX and the production staff here for making this a wonderful program. And thank you to my guests today, Chase McMunn and Erica Thatcher, making libraries interesting, even if you thought they weren't. And if you thought they weren't, you weren't paying attention. Coming up next is my favorite program on KCBX, and that is This American Life. Stay tuned, and thank you. This has been Central Coast Voices.